right, an announcement before we begin. As we've told you, we are looking into the potential for getting help for childcare, at least on an every other week basis. It does not seem to be coming together too well, however. So we're trying to be sensitive to what God's doing and, you know, what we want. And mostly what we want is what's important. But that's, I'm kidding, of course. So we're praying about it, but what we would like to do, at this point we have sort of four people on the schedule who will apply. So if you, we're really looking to get two more, is what we're looking for. Two people to apply once, and if we have two, what this would entail is just basically sitting with the boys who have their own electronics and, you know, for an hour once a month. Would be all you would have to do this. Because with six people, we would only have to have each person miss one time each month. So you would miss one class each month if you do decide to apply under this area. However, do not apply if you do not intend to make up the classes. This is going to be one of the responsibilities. This is part of the responsibility of this. If you miss a class, you must make it up. Because if you're going to make the application so somebody else can be here, that's good. And we're all for that. But on the other hand, we don't want you missing the class. Unless, of course, we forget to record it. Now, if that's the case, then we will flog the recorder. Inside joke there. But anyway, so pray about that. We could use a couple of more volunteers, maybe. If we have that, I think we will forego the hiring of anyone. And also, the hiring of things opens up issues, financial issues, frankly, because the IRS rules are very confusing. And if you've ever wanted to have an experience in futility, try to make sense out of the tax code. Some of them suggest you can pay people as contract workers, contract laborers. Others say, no, you've got to set up a withholding situation, even if you're paying them very minimal amounts of money. Theoretically, according to the IRS, if you babysit and get cash, you're supposed to take taxes out of it. But most people don't. Or mow lawns, or whatever you might do on the side. But we don't really want to get into all of that, because number one, it's very time consuming, very labor intensive, and also there's not any real point to it that we see. So we want to do the right thing, and we want to pray about it, but we're thinking if we got a couple of more volunteers, and again, you would miss one class a month, that's all we would be asking. Again, the boys are pretty well behaved. They have the fear of Ron in them, if not the fear of God. And I'm confident that it would not be hard to handle for anybody. And again, they have their electronics and things they can do in there to keep themselves busy. It's not as though you're going to be required to provide activities or anything like that. You can just basically keep an eye on them, and that's all it will take. So if you're interested in applying in that area, again, males or females, we don't care. It's not anybody can do this. Probably better let Bill know, because I think at the moment he's in charge of that. Although, if something happens, we may, ask somebody else to be in charge of it in that they handle the scheduling and all of that, which any competent believer could do. Think about it and pray about it. And if you're interested, see, you know, one of the deacons, Bill most likely, but you can see me or Rich too. So we can talk about it. All right, let's make sure if that didn't get you out of fellowship, or if it did, now's the time to rebound. And let's move on here. We're dealing with this gift of giving. And the fact that, like servers, they don't tend to want to be recognized. And rightly so. This is, in fact, as we have pointed out, the private parts gift. This is analogous to your genitals. You don't go parading them around before people, or certainly you're not supposed to. But we certainly know that Hollywood and all that, TV, they promote all this. Show your underwear, show everybody everything. Well, you know, it's really inappropriate, but basic modesty should, you know, cover all this. But since sometimes it don't for people, we have to deal with it. Well, 34 is where we left off here. Well, all believers are commanded to give out of their physical resources. This believer, or the one with this gift, really desires to give over and above. And again, as I pointed out, when we get into this issue here, Paul changes to articular participles, the one giving. And again, it focuses on the person, although the gift is in view, but it's the person with this gift. This believer really desires to give over and beyond the normal level of giving. Some people have a desire in this area. Other people say, well, I want to contribute. I want to do my fair share, but that's all my motive is. There's nothing wrong with that. We all have an obligation. Again, we're a family. We're a body. But again, some people are motivated in this area. They want to do more. They delight in it. And then they're blessed by God again to do so, to be able to do this. In 35, the principle that God is gracious to the gracious means that those that give according to God's plan will in turn be blessed for their generosity. Luke chapter 6. And this is true at a fundamental level as well as with a spiritual gift. God takes track of these things. Again, when you're one among 7 billion people on planet Earth, you may think, well, God's busy. He doesn't worry about me that much. He doesn't think about me. He doesn't notice me. He keeps track of every little detail. He's omniscient, for goodness sake. He's not having any trouble keeping up. We might, but God doesn't. Luke 6:38, give, and this is an imperative, again, also, so it's a command, and it will be given to you. Now, here he uses an unidentified subject that he switches to a plural. They will pour into your lap. Who will? And the issue is blessing may come from any source. God's not limited on who he can use to bless the person who gives. It may come out of the clear unexpectedly. I know there's been times when, you know, believers have a financial need and they pray about it and God provides them more work. And they say, well, I didn't want more work. I just wanted more money. Well, this is God's answer. He gives you the opportunity to make more money when you have a financial need. That's one way he can answer this. Your boss may call you and say, I've got some extra hours. Well, hey, I needed extra money. That's God answering your prayer. So don't turn down the hours and then complain, well, I needed extra money, but God wouldn't answer. That was his answer. You know? And other times he may just dump into your lap. That, as my experience, does not happen much. Where money just falls out of heaven on me. You know, I can't remember the last time that happened. In fact, it never has. But diligence, hard work, God will honor that. Yeah, you know, I know that there was a time when we had a financial need and we were really strapped. And it's sad to say, but Linda's mom passed away. We got some inheritance that we used to get through all that. And so that's God's way of providing. So, okay, there's your answer. Yeah, we don't wish people die so we can get money. I mean, that's not our prayer, obviously. But God can use things like that. And so God has ways of blessing people. And it doesn't say who's going to pour into your lap. It just says they, indicating multiple subjects, might. You might just be the recipient of somebody's goodwill. They may just give you some gift someday out of the clear blue that you weren't planning on. That happens. Believers, God can motivate a believer. We've got some believer out there somewhere. We don't know who it is and we don't care. But they send us $500 every month, just regular as clockwork. And it's sent through an anonymous deal up in, I think it's Ohio, isn't it? Somewhere up in there, yeah, Ohio. And we get this check every month. And we don't take it for granted. We're just grateful. But, I mean, somebody's motivated. The doctrine's motivated them to give. And there are other believers out there who listen online and all of that. And they make this application as well. They're to be commended for that. Ideally, we'd love to have them here with us. That's the best. But in the meantime, can they still apply? Well, certainly. And God will honor this, I think. I mean, but in the end, I don't have to judge all this. Thank God it won't be me at the bema seat evaluating this. It'll be God. It'll be Christ Jesus himself. So they will pour into your lap a good measure. Again, the idea here is of a bushel basket and wheat and these types of grains and all of that. That when you could measure out something to somebody, and you could pour it as lightly as you could so it wouldn't tamp down. And just give them the bare minimum. The basket's full. And then, you know, it's like you go to... This always used to gall me. I don't do it anymore. But I'd go to a restaurant or something. And while I was waiting on a table or something, I'd order a beer. And it'd have, you know, a head of foam on it this big. And by the time it went down, you had like 3/4 of a beer. Well, that's one way of cheating people. Well, this is kind of idea here that God won't cheat you. It'll be good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. And it's not just the minimum he can give you. I use the example of a beer, but you know, you can see how people can do this. Well, I'll just give you the bare minimum. You know, you go to McDonald's and you know those fries are light, but what are you going to do? You went through the drive-thru, you're going to go inside and complain over five french fries you didn't get? But you knew the thing was light. So there are people, you know, and I remember when I worked at Whataburger way back when. Now, this is when I was 16. But, you know, when we did the french fries, we were told fill them full. Make sure that thing, don't short the customer. Well, God says here, I won't short you. Now, he oversees this clearly, but who are the agents? Could be anybody. Pressed down, shaken together, running over. For by your standard of measure, if you're generous with people, it will be measured to you in return. But if you're selfish, self-centered, it's all about me, I'm taking care of me and mine first, don't expect this from God. God is not into that. He's against that attitude. Well, 36, since this is true, some believers may be tempted to take advantage of those with resources and the generosity to share them. I've seen this in believers too. People that take advantage of believers because they have wealth and are willing to share it. That is despicable in my opinion. That is just gross. This is not the way to go. Being attracted to them for less than honorable reasons and exploiting the giver's generous nature. Well, 37, on the other end of the spectrum, other believers may come to resent the person that is blessed financially. Why should they have so much? I apply. All that kind of mentality. As he functions under his gifts, suggesting that believers are less than spiritual because they've been blessed so much, which is a reverse form of discrimination. I've seen this in believers too. Why do they have so much? I'm just as spiritual as they are. Why does God bless them? And then they resent the person that God has blessed. Well, that's a kind of a dumb attitude to have. You're resentful of God blessing a fellow believer? And this is one of the things that and the people who are, well, none of them are any longer here. But people, I've heard people resent. Why should we give the pastor a bonus? We don't do that anymore. But at one time we did. Because I would forego pay through the year. I wouldn't insist on taking everything I could. And at the end of the year, if there was an excess, it was supposed to go to me. Many years I didn't even take it, even though it was supposed to. And that wasn't necessarily the best way to administrate it. We've changed all that. But still, the point is, I've heard some people say, why should the pastor get a bonus? We already paid. Why should we have an anniversary party? Well, first, I don't want any, so we're not going to do that anymore. But but you know, you have people like that. I remember when I was at Maranatha when they decided that after Jack had lived in his house for years and years, this little house, this little cracker box that was over there. I mean, if you've seen it, you'd be thinking, how does a family of four live in there? It was tall, it was tiny. And yet he lived there for years and years. They decided finally, okay, we've got ahead. We can build a house. We've got the property here. We can put a house on it. There was a big argument that day at the meeting, I remember. There was a business meeting call. Well, why should the pastor have... My house ain't that big. Well, for God's sake, the pastor's not worth any more than you, is he? That's people's mentality sometimes. Other people, they're different. They think, you know, whatever the pastor gets blessed with, I'm all for it. Well, and that's always been my attitude about believers. I didn't care who had what. It never bothered me. I didn't mind sacrificing while people had plenty. It didn't bother me. That was just my niche. And that has to be your attitude about money. I don't care. God can do what he wants to. For years and years, I mean, when we first got down here, there was first 5 years, we didn't have two nickels to scrape together at the end of the month. We were constantly broke. And then God gradually began to, and then finally 24 years down the road, I get full maintenance. And then people were resentful of that. Not hopefully nobody here. But why should he not have to work? And some of these people did not work very hard themselves. But they were resentful of the fact. But if you think it's not work, come with me one day. You come with me to the study and I'll set you there with me. And you watch. And you say, well, it doesn't look very hard. Well, we'll see. If you want to see what it's like, go ahead and proof some of the work. That we have to proof before Bible class. I better not offer that because Linda's doing it and she'd get mad. But she wants to make that application. But even she said to me lately, boy, after 2 hours in there, your head's spinning. I said, you should have had to write all of it. So it's work, but it's honorable work. And so my deal has always been, I have one prayer for all of you, that you'll prosper and be in good health as your soul prospers. God will bless you. I'm for that. I don't care how much he blesses you. I don't care if you live out on Longboat Key in the biggest mansion they got out there. It doesn't bother me. It's a long drive down here for class. You might want to rethink that. But that's another deal. So again, if people are blessed, don't let it bother you. That's great. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it, or are supposed to. I'm happy when people get blessed. Good for you. God's blessed you as your soul prospers. Well, 38, the occupational hazards of this gift include, A, those with the gift must never use their place in God's plan to attempt to use finances to control another believer's life. This is, could be an indirect form of meddling. We don't do that. Don't want that. Neither should one with this gift attempt to influence the ministry of another local church by giving or withholding funds. I've seen people do that. I don't like what you're teaching. I'm not giving. Well, let's see how God honors that attitude for you. Let's see how God blesses it. And I've watched people that were like this, and they are miserable believers. Miserable, unhappy people. And in many cases, miserable, unhappy people whose lives have unraveled. You say, well, he's just saying that because he wants us to give. No, I'm saying it because it's true. People who've lost marriages, lost homes, lost people who've committed suicide over. And why? Some of this is over money. Wow. I don't want that. I wouldn't want that at all. Well, B, this gift has been abused in many churches by either taking advantage of those with it or by publicly exalting those who give liberally over other believers with a less obvious gift. And that's right, we'll keep track at the end of the year. Only the treasurer knows what's given, but we'll get a plaque with your name on it and put it on one of these fold-up tables just to honor you. No, we won't. But I saw that all the time in the Baptist Church. These pews that have names on them. Donated by so-and-so. Why would, you know, Jerry Falwell, he used to sell bricks. Oh, get your name on a brick. Now, that means a lot. I know at the Bema seat, I'm going to be able to show Jesus my brick. Are you impressed, Jesus? Probably he won't be. I don't think so. No, we're not going to do stuff like that. We're not going to exalt people. On the other hand, we're not going to discriminate against, oh, they're blessed, so they must be unspiritual. No, that's not true. Well, see, those with this gift must fight the tendency to be stingy or grudging. That's a danger if you have this gift. But this is true of believers in general. If you're stingy and grudging, God's not going to bless you. If you're self-centered and focused on yourself only, God's not going to bless that. Since one whose gift is giving must function according to the qualification that follows. 39, the prepositional phrase uses the dative form of the noun haplates. Literally, that which is single as opposed to being double. Again, when used of a napkin, it meant a single sheet unfolded, not two ply. A cheap napkin, as it were. But a simple napkin is more the idea rather than cheap, which conveys the idea of that which is simple, that which is a single in purpose. And 40, it comes to have the sense of one that is not self-seeking, one that is free from any sort of pretense, hypocrisy, or hidden agenda. Thus, one must not give with ulterior motives. Why do people give? Well, I expect to be recognized. That's not going to happen. Why do people give? So I can be honored before other people. That's not going to happen. Why do people give? So I can get something back. That's the wrong motivation. You may not get anything back. Grace giving doesn't do that. That's not what grace is all about. So, again, either with an expectation of repayment or with the expectation of being recognized and praised. And 41, there are other passages that use this term in the specific context of giving. And because of that, some have suggested that this term has the nuance of liberality or generosity. 2 Corinthians. And really, a lot of our grace-giving principles come out of 1 and 2 Corinthians. Because Paul will deal with this Jerusalem offering in Romans. But not in the detail or to the degree he deals with it in Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 8:2. He talks about the Macedonians here. And these were poor churches. These were churches that did not have money. These were churches where, you know, all they could do was just barely get by. And still function. And that's fine. There are churches like that. The Philadelphia church in the last days is not known for being exceedingly wealthy. And again, what people consider wealthy, it depends upon your view, I suppose. For us, you know, prosperity for us would be having our reserve at 6 months. But we're talking, you know, less than $40,000. How many people would look at that and say, well, that's real prosperity there? You know, no, that's not prosperity. You can win more than that on The Price is Right. You know, or some game show. I see people on Jeopardy regularly win hundreds of thousands of dollars. I like to test my knowledge against them. So, you know, that's not real prosperity, frankly. You know, people would never consider retiring. Well, my retirement account's at $30,000. I'm going to quit. No, that's not prosperity. Nobody thinks that. Nobody in their right mind does. Well, he says that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. They gave, again, he says, I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor or grace of participating in the support of the saints. They wanted to apply. They were anxious to apply. They had to be held back. Paul had to say, you people are poor. Focus. And they said, no, we're giving. Also, chapter 9, verses 11 and 13, use this same word. Translated here, liberality. The other verse was generosity. That you will be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God. And verse 13, because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God. See, this is a part of all of this when people give appropriately and all of that. God is glorified in this. God receives praise and honor for His grace in people's lives. For your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all. So 42, the fact that this word is not well attested makes a decision difficult. Therefore, one might understand that the giver is to do so without any expectations, single purpose, and in a liberal fashion. I think that covers both the bases, and I don't see any real problem with that. And 42, as with the other spiritual gifts, all believers are commanded to apply the principles of grace giving. One cannot claim he is not obligated to give because he does not have that gift. Luke 6:38 is an imperative. 1 Corinthians 16:1, which again is found in the context of the Jerusalem offering, which we use as a pattern for normal grace giving. And we'll, as a matter of fact, after this, be sure and have with you. Well, it looks like we won't get there today, but hopefully maybe Tuesday or Wednesday we will get to that doctrine. We will be reviewing the doctrine of giving. We haven't looked at it in about 4 or 5 years. There, 1 Corinthians 16:1. Now concerning the collection of the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, you all do the same way. You do the same way. You do also. First day of the week, each one of you is to put aside and save. It's a command. It's not a suggestion. That as you, you know, it depends on when you get paid. Some people get paid weekly. That was typical in the ancient world. Some people get paid every other week. Some people get paid once a month. Well, whatever you get paid, their first deal is to sit down and give God His portion of that, whatever it is. This is your spiritual priority. Your number one praise priority in terms of your own personal spiritual existence is giving, is having that straight. But if that's not straight, the rest of your finances probably aren't going to be straight either because your priorities are skewed. And so, again, put aside and save. God blesses, one of the things He blesses is diligence and being frugal at some points. There are those people, as you know, if they get a nickel, it burns a hole in their pocket till they spend it. They just cannot hang on to money. Other people are the opposite. You can't get them to spend it when they should actually spend it. The extremes, again, truth is somewhere in the middle. Solomon taught about this in Ecclesiastes. Again, a great eye-opener for me. I tended to be that frugal person that never spent anything. Got to save every penny for a rainy day. Got to worry about the future. Got to make sure we're taken care of 10 years from now. What about tomorrow? What about today? And Solomon says, you can save up your money all you want. And store it away and get this big inheritance and leave it to somebody who may just be a flaming idiot. And I'll be damned if I'm doing that. If you can't handle money, I won't leave you a penny. You know, that's my deal. I'm not going to sacrifice and deny myself and then turn around and hand my money to somebody that can't handle money. That to me is an affront to the whole principle of being frugal. And again, there's an extreme to that. I used to never buy anything if it was on sale. And if I did, I bought the cheapest thing I could find. And I figured, well, God's in that. Well, He's not all the time. I also found out that cheap shirts don't last as long as good shirts do. And there's nothing wrong with having nice things. things. You have to have, again, you have to avoid these extremes. This deal of, oh, or it's always got to be the high. I've met believers like that, real clothes horses. It's always got to be the highest and the best. They got clothes that they couldn't wear if they had to. It'd take them years to go through their wardrobe. And I've watched believers. I know this one guy. One time, he gave away so many clothes. When I went in there, I thought you could have stocked a department store with what this guy was giving away. I didn't even see what he kept. You could have stocked a Bell's with this stuff. Or a Macy's or whatever. And I was like, wow. Look at all the, think of the money he must have spent on this stuff. Well, is God in all that? No, that's extreme. That's excessive. But on the other hand, is God in, well, all I can buy are t-shirts and rip t-shirts at that? No. Man, you can go to Goodwill and get a good deal. You can go to Macy's and get a good deal. You can also go to Macy's and get screwed out of your money. Because Tommy Bahama may not be worth it. But, you know, again, you have to pray about it, think about it. You got to ask God to bless you. You know, when I go shopping, I didn't have to used to shop much. Now I have a new view of it. Oh, God, I want you to bless my shopping basket. I got so much money I got to deal with. Got a budget. Yeah, you got to live on a budget. That's life. That's normal life. That's normal Christian life right there. Living on a budget. We all have to do it. Say, well, I don't have to. I'm filthy rich. Well, good for you. And I'm glad you're filthy rich. If you don't have to live on a budget, fine. The rest of us do. Because we have to plan ahead. So there, also, again, put aside and save. As he may prosper. God's not asking you to give what you don't have. But clearly, if you get a paycheck, you got it in your hand, right? You don't give what you don't have, but you've got it. That's the whole point. Here, where are we there? And you can also see 2 Corinthians 9:7. We're going to get to that verse anyway. 44, the sixth spiritual gift is that of leadership. The Greek noun is proestemi, literally to have a standing before, and refers to one in a position of leadership of any kind. The difference between leadership and authority is multitude. Anybody can be a good leader. You don't have to have authority to be a leader. Obviously, authority may go with that. But being a leader is somebody who people want to follow willingly. And that leadership, and you see it on teams, football teams. You'll see this all the time. They'll talk about, this is weird, guys. They made this freshman captain. Why? Because he's a good leader. He inspires people. He gets them to want to follow him. There are seniors on the team, 4 years, 5 years older. And they don't inspire that kind of confidence and zeal. So you want to be, again, if you have this gift, you kind of inspire people. Hey, follow me. And this is the kind of person you're willing to follow, that you want to follow. So 45, the most obvious position of leadership that a man can occupy is that of a husband and father. Thus, this verb is used by Paul to denote the efficient administration of a household. 1 Timothy 3, this is in the qualifications here for the office of pastor, but what it's dealing with is husbands and fathers first. Verse 4 here, 1 Timothy 3:4, that those in positions of leadership, and this applies to the deacons as well, he must be one who manages his own household well. And how does Paul define managing? He defines it in terms of keeping his children under control with dignity. Now, you've seen people who, you know, I've seen this skit on Saturday Night Live. I've seen it in other places. The guy standing there grilling, and you hear him hollering, "Johnny, get off of there. Stop that, Johnny. Don't make me come over there, Johnny. Johnny, I'm not going to tell you again." That's not managing your children well. You manage your children well by telling them, "I'm going to tell you once, and you're going to do it. If you do not do it, there will be repercussions. And the discipline will be swift," and be like George Bush, "swift and sure and certain." We will respond. And as a parent, you've got to discipline yourself to do this, because I know how it is as a parent. Sometimes you just think, oh, it's not worth it. It's always worth it. Be consistent in discipline. If you threaten something, you've got to follow through with it. So don't make threats you don't intend to follow through with in the heat of anger. This is why you can't discipline in anger. That's my advice to all parents. You don't discipline in anger. You're failing if you're doing that. You're sending the wrong signal. Because the child then says, well, they're just disciplining me because they're mad. No, you should be being disciplined because you're wrong. That's what you should understand. So parents cannot do that. They can't make these threats they don't follow through with. If you say it, you've got to do it, and you've got to enforce it. And so you don't tell them, I'm going to ground you for 2 weeks if you do this, and then a week later, well, I'm going to let you off. Don't do that. Do not do that. You're sending the entire wrong signal to the child. You're telling them, you can blow me off and get away with it. Is that what you want them learning about authorities in life? Because then they're going to try that with their teachers, they're going to try it with their bosses, and maybe, unfortunately, the cops. See if you blow off the authority of the cops and get away with it. Hell, you may be innocent, they may shoot you, who knows? Nowadays, we're not sure. But, you know, if you're not in that position, you never have to worry about it, do you? When they tell you stop and stand still, you stop and stand still. You don't keep walking away from them. You can get shot. You say, well, he was unarmed. I don't care. He was disobeying a direct order. And who knows what the guy was walking towards? Who knows what his plans were? Cops can't read minds. And I'm not for people, unarmed people getting shot. I saw this poor black guy who was trying to help this mentally challenged guy. And he's laying on the sidewalk with his arms out and they shoot him. Now that's abuse. That should be prosecuted. That is out of line completely. But we're talking about if you teach your children, you can get them away with disobeying authorities. You're sending them a horrible message for life. Because there's some authority down the road like me who they're not going to run over. And there are other people like me out there too. Be advised of that. I'm not the only one. That you will not run over these authorities. Keep your children under control. Managing your household well. You've got to be in charge of the budget. You've got to be in charge of everything. This is a big job for men. Wives should be praying for their husbands. How hard is all this? It's difficult. It's not easy. Also, verse 5, if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? This means that if a man is not qualified in this area, this could keep you out of the ministry. That if people, that it's known, you're just an idiot, your wife's out of control, your kids are out of control, who would put you in charge of a church? And see, I've never faced that in the 27 years I've been here. I've never faced any deal of my wife or kid. Nobody's ever had to say anything. Because they weren't ever. Now, they may turn out to be spiritual idiots. I can't help that. But I can darn sure make sure they walk the chalk line and obey in terms of what we do overtly and how we run the household. And that's the man's responsibility. See, this deal of man, you don't ever see this word used of the wife. It doesn't tell the wife to run the household. That's not found in the Bible. But I see men, they don't want to do this. And so they say, well, my wife's better at it. I am. That does not excuse you. That does not let you off the hook. My wife's better at planning. My wife's better at this. My wife, she may be. And you may be able to use her talents. But at the bottom line, at the end of the day, the buck stops with you. And if somebody says, well, who's God going to ask at the end of the day? The man. Not the woman. And this is why Eve was, you know, in some ways let off the hook for this whole deal in the fall. She wasn't the authority. She wasn't the responsible one. It was Adam. The fall is never blamed. I've heard that old joke. Where would we be without Eve? Oh, still in the Garden of Eden. No, we wouldn't. But still, I get the joke. But the fact is, Adam's blamed for the fall, never Eve. By one man, the sin nature entered into the world. And spiritual death through the sin nature. Also, verse 12. Deacons also must be the husbands of only one wife. This is a command to monogamy, not the fact that all pastors and deacons have to be married. Timothy clearly was not married. Paul was not married. They were both in the ministry. Timothy ended up pastoring the church at Ephesus. History said that's where he finished his course, where Paul left him there in this book at the beginning of 1 Timothy. And good managers of their children and their own households. At the end of the day, the buck stops with the man, the husband, the father. So say, well, the wife handles the discipline. Wrong. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And typically speaking, wives aren't as good at it. Why? Because the fairer sex is fairer. They're more tender. They're more compassionate. Most normal women. I've met some that are not. But most of them are. You know who you are. But most of them are. They are more tender-hearted. They don't want, you know, discipline's not their favorite thing. And I know that. So when our children disobeyed, I said, okay, here's the deal. I'm not going to be the only disciplinarian in the house. If the children disobey you, you've got to spank them. You've got to deal with them. And if you don't spank them and they don't get the message, well, then I'll spank them after that. So either you spank them hard and deal with them, or they're going to get two whoopings. Well, that's a good motivation. Most wives say, well, I don't want my kid getting two whoopings. So they spank well. When you have to. You don't always have to. But when that has to, can be done. So the deacons also, they're under this, as they're under almost everything that the pastor's under, with the exception they don't have to be able to teach. They don't have to get up here and do this. So 46, there's no doubt that positions of leadership within a local church are also in view in this verb. 1 Thessalonians 5:12. This verb encourages them, or covers them rather. But it's not limited to that, because a person could exercise leadership. For instance, somebody can handle something that a normal believer could handle, a male or female, and they'll be responsible to a deacon. We're not just throwing them out there and saying, you're in charge of this and you have nobody to answer to. You'll still have somebody in the chain of command to answer to. But if it's an application you can make, then good. Now, we request you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord. Again, you got this same verb, pro estemi, who stand before you and exhort you and give you instruction. Nuthateo is used for providing discipline and education to a child. And again, you're my spiritual children. There's a lot of analogies. It doesn't mean you're not full-grown adults. I know you are. But, you know, you're also sheep. I'm a shepherd. There's a difference at that level. I mean, I'm also a sheep too. We're all slaves in God's household. I'm the chief steward, however. So there are these distinctions made. But again, it doesn't demean believers. That's not what it's here for. But there are people who are allowed to get up and to tell you, hey, here's how the cow eats the cabbage. And you better pay attention. I'm not here to just hear myself talk. I'm here to help you. I'm here to get you to the Bema seat with maximum glory. Isn't that what you want? Or do you want to get up there and be a loser? Again, shame is a powerful motivation. Should be, anyway. And also 1 Timothy 5:17. The elders who rule well. Again, pro estemi, who lead well. Who stand before you and do their job well. Are to be considered worthy of a double honorarium. Double honor starts again in the mental attitude, but the emphasis here in this passage is on money. You say, well, you're only teaching this because it helps you. No, I'm only teaching it because it's here. I don't write this stuff. I just have to report it. I'm like the guy reading the cue cards in the news, the little crawler. You know, I just read what's there. Do some things work to my advantage? I suppose, but many things go against me too. But I'm not going to tell you what those are. So whatever it is you make, what's your income this year? Double it. That's what I'm worth to you. Whether you know it or not. You should know it. The Bible makes this plain. Especially those who work hard at proclaiming the truth and teaching you. Preach. I don't like preaching because we are not preachers. We are heralds who herald the truth. And it is hard work. And I'm not here to whine or complain. I enjoy it. I've got the best job in the world. I enjoy it. This is what I wanted all my life, and God provided it. And I am blessed in very, very many ways. And so, but here, whatever you think you're worth, double it for me. I'm worth $25 an hour. I'm worth $50. And for years and years, I never insisted on being paid double what everybody else got. I don't insist on it now. Whatever God provides is fine. And I have to orient to that. There's been times where we were short. Well, I took pay cuts. You know what? I don't care. If I was in it for the money, I would have quit. Pay cut? That's a four-letter word. It's actually two, three-letter words, but still, you get the point. For many pastors, that would be the anathema. That'd be the end of them. I'm not taking a pay cut. You should be willing to take a pay cut. You should be willing to work a job if you have to. You know, you get what God provides. And again, it may take 20, 30 years for you to get what God wants for you. Well, you've got to be willing to wait. I've done it. So nobody's better than I am is the way I look at it. If God puts me through that, well, okay. we'll just wait and see what God can do. But when God blesses you and you're on the right end of this, believe me, it's satisfying. And if you can have it with a clear conscience, it's doubly satisfying. That is important. So 46, there is no doubt again that Paul, that this does appeal to people in positions in leadership. Not only them, because there are other types of leaders, again, who inspire people. Well, 47, however, one should not limit this term to the administration of a household or to the leadership of a local church. It should be extended to include anyone who has charge of a group of any size. Like our daughter Laura, she has a preschool class. She's pro-esteeming in this sense of the word. She leads them. She stands before them. She tells them it's time to go outside. They go outside. She tells them it's time to eat lunch. They eat lunch. That any group of any size, doesn't matter what your group is. The smallest group, of course, is the household. And if you can't do that right, well, you can't do anything right. Really, that's the small one. If you can't do the little thing, you're not going to be able to do the big thing. I can't dive off the diving board and do a jackknife. Well, you can't do a double reverse twisting half gainer then. You know, that's just not going to happen. Well, 48, a person is a leader. A leader, rather, is a person God has motivated to address larger issues and projects, and to inspire and coordinate the actions of others in order to achieve greater goals than a single believer could achieve alone. 49, those with this gift are the big picture type of people. They can visualize the task and all that will be necessary to complete the task in a timely and successful manner. And 50, this gift is one that can commit to whatever the task is before him, recognize and overcome whatever problems or opposition he may encounter, since he clearly understands the goal. He is able to make critical evaluations, make firm decisions, and complete the task before him. And 51, this person must be one that learns and knows how and when to delegate authority. This person can't be a micromanager. That'll destroy a leader. I've watched men get destroyed by micromanaging stuff. It'll destroy you. There's the laissez-faire type. Well, I don't have to be in charge. Let them figure it out. And then there's the micromanager. I got to tell them every little thing to think and do or they can't function. No, we're supposed to be raising mature believers who can function on their own. And raising children who are good examples of this. And not micromanaging everything. Yeah, they need more advice and leadership and guidance when they're younger. But as they get older and as they demonstrate maturity and responsibility, you broaden their horizons. But not until they demonstrate it. You don't just turn them loose and say, you're 16, here's your car. No, what can go wrong now? And you know what? Yeah, do you know what age has the most car accidents of any group in all the country? 19-year-olds. Just saw that on the news the other day. 19-year-olds. They got a little time under the belt, so they think they're kind of immune, and they think they're smart enough now, and they got it all wired. And yet, this is the group that has the largest number of automobile wrecks, are 19-year-olds. Now, do you think that's accidental? I don't think so. I think it speaks to a larger issue. So again, you broaden their horizons. You give them more responsibility, more freedom as they show they can handle it. If they show they can't handle it, if they want to violate doctrine, shut it back down. That's the parent's job. Until you get old enough to move out of that house, you're under their authority. Whatever they say goes. Oh, I don't like that. Well, move out. Go out there and find out what the real world's like. Go get you a place. And I did that when I know exactly how you feel because I was there. I've been young once. You may not believe it. But I was 18 once. And I said, boy, 18, I'm out of here. My parents are idiots. And I'm going to show them. I went out and by 19, I had a motorcycle wreck and was back home 6 months later laying on my parents' couch for another 6 months. Oh, boy, I was smart, though. I showed them. Yeah, well, see, they were gracious enough to take me back in and take care of me. And drive me to my physical therapy appointments and my doctor's appointments. Because I couldn't drive. I couldn't do anything. I had two legs in casts. And it was months before I could even walk. So, again, I thought I knew it all. And I know how it is when you're young. You think you're really smart. I get it. I've been there. I was smart once. Now I don't think I'm so smart. That's how Solomon... You read Solomon carefully in Ecclesiastes. And he does not come across as somebody who knows it all. He comes across as somebody who's seen it all. but he doesn't know it all. So again, you have to be able to delegate authority. You got to distinguish between what you need to do personally and what can safely be entrusted to others. And there's a lot of thinking that goes into that. What can I trust to other people? I tended for years to not trust other people because I never had good leadership in my deacon staff, sadly. But now I do. Now I don't have to agonize over every little thing. Well, you guys can take care of it. So, you know, they may need more help because they have to do a lot more than they did, than my other deacons did. Because I'd oversee all that. Well, I still oversee it. Don't get me wrong. It's not as though I'm not aware what's going on. But I don't have to watch every little detail and think, oh my God, is this going to be done right? No, I know they'll do it right. I know they want to do it right. So 52, in that regard, one with the gift of leadership is not a law to himself. Since he is functioning in a local church, he must work in conjunction with and under the authority of the royal chain of command. Again, if you volunteer to work in the nursery, or not nursery, we don't want to use that, but child care. These are not children, these are not babies. We're not having a nursery. But if you volunteer and you want to make that application, you'll have authority over them. Whether you're a male or a female, you'll have authority over them. But you'll still answer to us. So you can't go in there and say, well, they acted up. I felt the need to beat the crap out of them. No. You can't do that. Now, they may need it. They may deserve it. But I'll tell you what. You just have to come and interrupt Bible class one time. And they'll have to deal with me. And you don't want to deal with me when you've interrupted my Bible class. You won't like me very much. You say, I don't like you very much now. That may be. You'll like me less then. The only people I ever don't care if they interrupt my Bible class is if you get hung up and you're a little late and you want to come anyway. If you come in 5-10 minutes late, I don't care. If you come in a half hour late, I really don't care. Now, I may look at you because you'll shock me when you open that door, but it won't be because I'm upset with you. You know, I want you here. I like seeing your smiling faces, every single one of them. And that doesn't upset me. Upsetting my Bible class for not a good reason? No, you don't want to be on the end of that one. Well, 53, this leads to one of the several occupational hazards that one with the gift of leadership might encounter. A, since he is dependent on the cooperation of others, he may become disillusioned or disheartened when others fail to apply as he thinks or knows they should. That's an occupational hazard. People will let you down. As any position of any leader can tell you, get used to it. People are going to fail. We fail. So they have to forgive us and move on, so we have to forgive them and move on. That's just the way it is. This is how believers deal with one another in a normal family. A leader often gives orders without taking the time to explain them. Now, you probably never had that with your husband at home, ladies, where he just tosses off an order and expects you to do it and doesn't stop and explain it. But if you haven't, you will. And anybody in authority. They don't always have to. See, their job is not to stop and explain to you, say please and thank you every time. I'm not against being cordial and using manners. We're not against that. But sometimes in the heat of the issue, you don't have time to stop and explain stuff. You know, and somebody may think, oh, I'm helping you, so I'm going to interrupt you. You're not helping me by interrupting me. That's not helping. You may think it is, but it's not. And maybe the leader doesn't need to hear every little detail. Because he's got a bigger picture to deal with. And you think every little detail is important to me. Well, it might be to you, but it may not be to him. You have to be sensitive to this. So he may not have time to explain them. Thus, others may begin to get the idea that they are merely pawns in the operation and not really appreciated or respected. I want to make it plain. I appreciate and respect every application any of you make. The people that show up and apply, set up Bible class. Again, we all have that responsibility. If you come here and get taught, you have a responsibility to help. This is not, I'm not going to be the little red hen. Who'll help me bake the bread? Who's going to help me plant the wheat? Not I. Who wants to help me eat the bread? They all wanted to eat the bread. Nobody wanted to do any of the work that had to be done to go with it. So for your manna, you have to. I expect you to apply as good fellow believers and fellow soldiers. And we are in a warfare together. We apply towards each other. We don't throw everything off. Oh, somebody else will do it. That's the wrong attitude. Somebody else will have to do it. But it doesn't ameliorate your responsibility. It doesn't lessen it. So again, I expect everybody to do their part. Pull your share. We all have that. I respect if you apply in there and you miss a Bible class, I'm appreciative of that. I may not stop you and pat you on the back every week, but it doesn't mean I don't notice. Or the other leadership that they don't notice. I'm sure they do. Well, see, since his niche will involve organizing and leading other believers, he must avoid the temptation to be a law to himself and think he's exempt from the royal chain of command. You're not, no matter what level of authority or leadership you may have. Again, a leadership may or may not involve authority per se. You can inspire people without being their authority, their boss. You see that on any job. D, another potential problem relates to the fact that every believer must delegate responsibility, which may lead those working with him to think he is lazy or avoiding certain tasks. You may think, well, Ron doesn't apply. Oh, I've applied many, many years for a long, long time. I'm not saying I don't have to apply now, but I've never asked a believer to do something I wouldn't do other than work in childcare because I can't be in two places at once. I mean, until we come up with a way to do that, you know, some sort of time machine where I can be in two places at once, then I'd take my turn in there, but I can't do both. Now, what's my bigger priority? Feeding all the flock. So I have to entrust other people to take care of a smaller segment of my flock. And that can be done. So, again, you may think I'm lazy. Again, if you think so, come visit me. I'll be ready for the study about 9:30 in the morning. You be there, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And we'll go over what we have to do. And you'll find out how hard it is to trace out the usage of a word or its etymology. Where does it come from? Where does the noun exousia, authority, come from? Actually, believe it or not, it comes from the to be verb, a verb of existence. And it means that which proceeds from existence, from your volition, from your will. And again, the right to exercise that will. That's what authority is. The right to impose your will on others. So, our time is gone. We'll have to stop there. But just to point out again, I've not ever done or asked people to do what I won't do myself. So hopefully that sets a good example. And if it doesn't, well, I don't know what else to do for you. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunity to fellowship together as the body of Christ. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our souls. In Christ's name, amen.